Welcome back to State of Affairs. I'm Cameron Lawrence. Despite recent talk about a possible recession, it's still a fairly strong economy with low unemployment. In this tight labor market, more companies are grappling with how to create or maintain good employee morale so they have less turnover. Some companies and organizations are less concerned with turnover and just think fostering good morale is the right thing to do. How do you create good morale in the workplace? Can it be created? How is it destroyed? We're addressing these questions this hour with my two guests, management consultant Brayton Bowen, author of the recent book, Recognizing and Rewarding Employees, and with Kent Hall, president-elect of the Louisville chapter of the Society for Human Resource Management. And we're taking your calls, listeners, at 814-8255-814-TALK or toll-free 1-877-814-TALK. What do you think creates good employee morale, and what do you think destroys it? Gina's on the line from Louisville. Hi, Gina. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call today. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I was calling. I work for an insurance company, and I'm a little bit of a different position. I'm actually an outside adjuster, and so mainly I get, you know, most of my communication through emails from either the main office or a local office here. And one of the things that has destroyed morale in our unit here in Louisville is that we've gotten emails that are just so desensitized, mm-hmm. and they're so general that it just comes down, you know, very harsh on us. And no one knows who it's really directed to, but they're just so negative. Yeah. By the time that they're sent to us, it's kind of hard to discern what the real meaning is behind it, you know, and to take the positive when people just send these abrasive emails.
It's kind of like an email has two different messages. I mean, there's the written message, and then what's all this other stuff coming with this? The impersonalness. it's impersonal. It's confusing. I don't know how to respond to what you said.
Right. It's confusing. It is impersonal. And I just think that sometimes it is very demoralizing to get an email that may be directed towards one of your coworkers, you know, versus you for the job that you're doing.
That reminds me of the example of when you have a staff meeting and the manager calls everybody in and yells at everybody for something one person in that room has done.
Exactly.
And everybody in the room is kind of like, we all know that so-and-so doesn't come into work on time. Why are you yelling at all of us for it?
And it's exactly. even more impersonal. I mean, there's not even a face-to-face meeting with email.
No, we recently you know, received an email from our company basically stating some job objectives and, you know, stating the numbers that we had to meet and basically that if we didn't meet those numbers, we would lose our jobs. And, you know, again, it was so impersonal, and I thought, if nothing else, we should have had some kind of face-to-face meeting. But to send that kind of message over, you know, on an email is just, to me, very ridiculous and as
okay.
far as morale.
Right, sure. Brayton Bowen, if you were hired by this company to improve employee morale, or at least to make recommendations to try to do that, how would you talk to the manager who was communicating with his or her employees as Gina's manager is?
Well, the example that Gina gave is very real, and it is only a piece of a total picture in terms of the kind of culture that's being created in that organization. And obviously, it's a culture of fear. And we can put all kinds of patina around it, but that's what it's all about. For the organization that's doing that, clearly that has to stop, or they're going to experience more serious problems. It certainly isn't going to help them with their turnover. It's not going to help with morale. It's not going to help with the way people feel, their employees, toward customers if they don't feel good toward the organization. So it's costing them in the bottom line. It's oftentimes not easily calculated right away, but it certainly can be translated.
I'll tell you something else. Very basic issue. A lot of times, we learned this when we're doing our Myers-Briggs profiles, but you learn that people don't always want to talk about what they think. Sometimes they want to talk about what they feel. And sometimes in communication, it comes both ways. So when somebody tells you something and they say, well, how does that make you feel, is a very important issue of the question, because sometimes we always talk about what we think. To Gina and to all those people who are working both, sometimes you're a supervisor and you have somebody who supervises you. And I think you have that issue of good feedback. Good communication is giving good feedback. If somebody sends a message that's garbled or it communicates something other than what you felt it should have communicated, you need to let that person know.
So the employee does have some responsibility to try to clear up possible misunderstandings, this sort of thing.
Well, actually, I think you have the issue of timeliness, because sometimes, you know, you're out in the field, you're getting your job done. But if your organization doesn't have regular meetings where you can talk about morale issues, you should strongly encourage that. It does affect the bottom line. It is an impact on productivity. So you want to make sure that you do that.
Okay.
Encourage it.
Gina, thanks for the call. Listeners, we're talking about workplace morale. What do you think helps foster good workplace morale? Maybe you have some personal experiences of a good boss, a bad boss, company policies that you thought contributed to good morale, or conversely, destroyed morale. 814-8255-814-TALK or toll free 1-877-814-TALK. I guess we could call this our Management 101. Brayton Bowen, what about a workplace that is simply abusive to employees, where employees are treated with a great deal of disrespect? Is there a solution to poor morale in a workplace like that?
Well, there certainly are many ways to fix that kind of environment. I think that it's important for responsible managers in organizations, leadership, to understand, first of all, that their organizations can be more profitable if they have pro-people practices. Mm-hmm. And that has been proven time and again, and we can recount any number of organizations from Hewlett-Packard to Southwest Airlines to Men's Warehouse who have been extremely profitable, while other counterparts in their industry have not been. And these are organizations that have pro-people practices. The whole notion of email that we just talked about a moment ago just is something that signals the kind of stuff that's going on in our workplace. And yesterday there was an article on desk rage that Wayne Thompson did for the Courier Journal. The degree to which we peak the anxiety in an already stressful work environment is the degree to which we are really inviting a tremendous amount of backlash. And there was another article that also appeared today in the Wall Street Journal on the same issue. I would just remind managers in organizations that for the last 10, 15 years that we've been going through this downsizing process, many of the positions that have been eliminated have been the positions of managers. Those managers who continue to be in the workforce today need to add value to what they are doing in the company, and recognizing and rewarding employees responsibly is part of that value.
Is it possible to have an organization, a company, that is hard-charging, highly productive, profitable, effective, and that has good employee morale?
Absolutely.
Given that those employees are probably going to have heavy workloads, there's
sure.
probably going to be some stress. Can there be good morale in a situation like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's any kind of a ratio or a relationship between somebody who works hard, works long hours, and morale. I mean, because you can have high morale and be putting forth maximum effort, be working long hours. To somebody else, you know, I look at somebody who works 80 hours a week, and I think that would be a, you know, an unpleasant job. But to somebody who loves their work and really getting a lot out of it, I think that's, to them, they're very, very satisfied. They're very motivated. As a matter of fact, I think it's what employers want. Because highly motivated people are highly productive people. But what motivates me may not motivate Brayton.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a point he was making earlier.
And that's an excellent point, because motivation is an inside job. It comes from within us. And understandably, in our capitalistic society, we place a lot of emphasis on monetary rewards. But in the final analysis, relationships are very, very important, and relationships between employers and employees is important. We just saw a show on Want to Marry a Millionaire. I think we all concluded that you can't accelerate the timing of a relationship and get instant gratification. Relationships take time.
What are the top reasons that an employee stays with a company?
There are several reasons why employees stay with a company. First of all, the kind of culture that the organization has, the values that it has.
When you say culture, be more specific.
A culture that is constructive rather than destructive, a culture that is healthy rather than toxic, how it values its people. That's also part of the culture. The way we communicate with one another is part of that culture. Culture is what it takes to fit in. It's like going into a fine restaurant. There are no rules written on the wall in terms of how we're supposed to behave, but we know that there are certain things that we have to do in order to fit into that restaurant. Organizations are the same way. There are written and unwritten rules, and the degree to which those rules make me feel comfortable and make me want to exhibit my motivation is a degree to which we all benefit.
May I also add that organizations do effective jobs at certain times with sharing the unwritten rules with employees, and sometimes they're very ineffective at letting people know what are the unwritten rules, what are the expectations of this organization for their employees. I think if they can do a very effective job of that, they're going to do a better. I'm talking from the very beginning of employment, even prior to employment.
What would be an example of an unwritten rule?
Dress, conduct, extracurricular activities.
So, for example, you're expected to be polite toward your fellow employees. That would be an example of an unwritten rule.
Politeness, sure. Civility in the workplace. In some organizations, it's more highly valued than in other organizations.
If a company, let's take the for-profit realm. If a company is very profitable and there is a toxic workplace, why is that company going to care about employee morale if they're already making a lot of money? I mean, let's say that it's not in the manager's character to care about this.
Well, are organizations in the business of making money in the short term only, or are they in the business of long-term viability and long-term measures of success? I think some of the issues are people are only looking at just getting to the end of the day.
I think that the question that you ask again is a very tough question, and it's a very pertinent question in terms of our society, our economy. We have any number of companies that are hard charging, who do not have pro people practices, who are profitable, and who are valued by Wall Street. And they're not companies that are necessarily going to go out of business. So I don't think that's the threat. The opportunity, on the other hand, is being missed for that organization to be more profitable and to be more productive and more constructive for its employees. And that's the side of the equation that oftentimes gets lost when we're so focused on the bottom line that as long as the numbers are there, we think everything's okay.
Listeners, we're talking about employee morale this hour. You can join the conversation at 814-8255-814-TALK or toll free 1-877-814-TALK. Ken Hall, you mentioned earlier in the hour mission statements and values statements. This is very popular in this country now, both in corporations and in nonprofit organizations. What effect do they really have on an organization or a company? And I'm particularly interested in what effect they have if the company's actions don't match their mission statement or value statement.
Well, I think they're very, very important. As a matter of fact, I think it's been my experience that if you can determine the principles and the values that upon which that business is based, that it says a lot on the conduct of all the employees that are part of that organization. You can give your employees a 50 or 100 page policy manual or employee handbook, and it's really not worth the paper it's printed on if the words don't match their actions. And a lot of organizations, I think they have a public face, but their internal operations don't necessarily mirror that in every aspect of their business. Employees want to feel good about where they work. They want to feel good about what they contribute to the organization. It's difficult to do that in an environment where your values are out of sync with the organization upon where you work. Now, I'm not saying that the organization is wrong and the employee is right, but if they're out of sync, you're going to have a problem.
Well, it strikes me that if the mission statement doesn't match the company's actions, if there's a big gap there, that's going to lead or could lead to a lot of cynicism on the part of employees.
Well, I think you're right. And in our community, for example, there is a long-term care facility that has a statement of values. And the values center on quality and justice, collaboration, compassion, and stewardship. And recently we did an employee opinion survey for this organization, and what we found was that employees are positively attracted to this organization. They stay longer than their counterparts in other healthcare facilities, and they definitely are making a difference not only for the employees, but in the quality of care that they are giving to their residents. So it is very important.
But it can't be just words on paper.
Cannot be. It has to be real.
Let's go back to the phones. Keith is on the line from Louisville. Hi, Keith. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. Very interesting program, and always enjoy it.
Thanks, Keith.
My concern is, since this problem has been going on steadily for the last 20 years, and people seem unable to solve the problem, then why not meet it at the front door as the layoffs occur and pick up these people with the federal government's assistance and let them know that as soon as they are let go, that they will have some place that someone will pick them up and take care of them, meaning with training. That's what this whole country needs, is training, because and what has caused the problem, I'm sorry to say, is the wonderful computer. The computer has enabled man to take control of large, huge areas, whereas before it had to be done with other workers. But now that's no longer needed. And so all these people are just waiting their turn, I guess, to be let go.
The comment on technology is an interesting comment. It certainly has pluses and minuses. The pluses are in enabling us to do far more than we ever were able to do before. The pluses are that we are able to create virtual organizations where people can stay at home, or they can be traveling. They do not necessarily have to show up at a physical plant. The negatives are that we're becoming a virtual organization in many respects. But the good news in all of this, I should say the bad news is it's certainly stressful, but the good news is that in many ways technology is opening the doors to our corporations and allowing people to step out into a bigger world. Mm-hmm. People are having to be more responsible for themselves. They're having to center on the work that they do, the value that they bring to their job, and in many respects, this is a positive. Hopefully we can talk about this a little more.
Yes, there's a gentleman over in Indiana that I think his name is Harley, and he's going around showing corporations. He's been doing this for a number of years, showing corporations that you can have somebody work 6 hours instead of eight, produce the same or more, and they will feel healthier. This has already been proven. They'll feel healthier. They'll have a better attitude. They'll have more home, more time at home with their families, and things really work out a lot better. And he was interviewed on several other programs in the last, I'd say, 5 years. I guess the Today program, something along that line. But I still go back to my point, which is if a person knew that he or she would be taken care of, because that's what the government's supposed to do, whether it's city, county, state, federal, it doesn't matter. But if they knew that they would be shown, if you'll pardon the expression, a technological field and how to study in it and something to do in it, then they would feel like they would be included and they really wouldn't lose anything. Matter of fact, they might even look forward to a layoff.
Keith, I appreciate your call and your comment. What about this idea of more extensive retraining programs for people who are laid off from jobs?
Well, I'm going to agree with Keith's point, I guess, in the sense that what I've witnessed is that with a booming economy and a low unemployment rate, what's happened is a lot of employers have sort of been laid bare, where what you've shown is who has good employment practices and who doesn't have good employment practices, and it's freed employees up from being locked into a job they didn't really want to have anyway. There's more mobility in the workplace now. So the issue there is how do employees get the skills they need, and a lot of times the employers are willing to give them the skills, and so there's more activity in this area.
If the economy tanks, Brayton Bowen, do you think fewer companies are going to care about what kind of employee morale they have if there's no longer, say, a tight job market?
I don't think the economy is going to tank. I do think that the pressure is going to be on to produce more with less. And I would suggest that those organizations that are going to be successful are the ones who can balance the equation, as Kent and I have been talking about, recognizing that the bottom line is important, but the resources that they're making it with are equally important, if not more so.
Okay. Gordon's on the line from Paoli, Indiana. Hi, Gordon. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? I enjoy your program very much on workplace environment. And I don't know where any of you ever worked for the post office or not, and I work for the post office in this area, and we have a bad situation with management, and there doesn't seem to be any solution to it. This has been brought to the attention of, of the manager's superiors, and we've been promised, that there will be something done on two or three occasions, but the man just continues his arrogant, rude behavior toward the employees and the customers, and nothing seems to get done because it's just a stone wall. It seems to be a organization set up of sort of a clique that covers and lies for each other, and there can't be anything done about it.
Is this person a position of authority, or are they a coworker?
Authority.
And I'm writing a couple of notes here. You talked about there doesn't seem to be a solution.
No.
Which is frustrating.
Right.
Unmet promises, which means this is taking a lot of time. And this arrogant and rude behavior, which you feel wouldn't be tolerated if it was you or one of your coworkers, is tolerated with somebody who is supposed to be setting an example for their work unit.
Right.
Well, and the Postal Service, of course, has had a history of problems with violence in the workplace. So I don't know if it's fair to say that this is endemic in the organization or not. Brayton Bone, what are your reactions to this?
Well, I think, first of all, as far as the post office is concerned, we certainly have adopted a phrase, postal rage, from the post office experiences. But the post office is not unique, and in many ways they have a much better picture than I think we can appreciate as a general public. But the particular situation that you've cited, there comes a point in any relationship where we have to make decisions as individuals as to whether we are going to just simply cope and therefore stay with the situation, or whether we're going to take ourselves out of the situation. And I think it certainly becomes more difficult the longer we're in a relationship, particularly if we're approaching a retirement situation, to walk away. But somehow we either have to cope or we have to get out.
Can I make a comment, too, before we change topics? I think one issue that I want to get across to our listening audience is, speaking on behalf of the HR profession, is too often I have experienced situations that could have been worked out if the parties involved would have talked to somebody. Let people know about the problem, even if it's even if it has to be through some kind of an anonymous system. It's better to let people know what the problem is. And making my plug.
Gordon, thanks for the call. Okay, Ken Hall, you opened up this topic. The Dilbert comic strip is based on this whole notion that I'm going to present to you.
Great.
That human resources professionals historically have sometimes been anti-employee, and employees have sometimes felt that by going to human resources, they got into a bigger fix than they were in to start out with.
Sure, yeah. I think that I find Dilbert funny, like everybody else does. I think that especially when it points out real workplace problems.
So you have
an issue there, I think, where what happens when somebody says, well, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I don't want to get myself in trouble. And those are very real issues and real fears.
I'm going to jump in here for
a
second. Having been in the world of human resources for a period of time before I got into the consulting world in the last 10 years, mm-hmm. I have to tell you that in many respects, we human resources, I'll put that hat on, we're spin selling. We were trying to put the best face, the best patina on bad situations, and we weren't being as straightforward with our employees, and we weren't encouraging and coaching our management to be as straightforward with employees as I think we are today. I think HR professionals really have recognized where the pitfalls of that approach have been, and they're stepping up to today's reality. We have to be more proactive and more straight.
I've just got half a minute left. Do things like daycare, parking, flex time, a more open office environment. Do these kinds of little perks matter to employees?
I think the real perk is putting the emphasis on the value of work. We have distracted ourselves too often by these important pieces, certainly, but they are little incentives like stars and sticky faces in school that attract us away from our joy of learning.
Okay, I'm going to have to end on that. No, we are out of time for today's program. My thanks to our callers and to my guests. Brayton Bowen, thank you so much for joining us today. And Ken Hall, thank you so much
thank
as
you,
well.
Karen.
We'll
thank
come
you.
Back to this topic
thank
another
you very
day.
Much.